So I don't work in cosmology and I don't work in particle physics. I work in nuclear theory to make things worse. I don't work at RIC, but at low energies. So the obvious problem that I'm facing is what interesting I can tell to this kind of audience. So I thought that I could try and talk about a low energy view at high energy elementary processes. And I start with very simple processes of involving photon and then electron and electron pairs, and then I'll try to draw some general conclusions. Why this will be a low energy point of view? At low energies, when you consider nuclear reactions, in reactions something happens as a function of time and location, and at different locations you break initial objects, they emit something, this moves on. And in fact, this kind of also strategies adopted a trick for large systems. So what I'll consider here is whether such a perspective can be developed for elementary systems. And in particular, this can be of importance as when elementary processes are embedded in a large system. And maybe their extension is amplified by Lorentz effect. And I concentrate on perturbative processes. And the reference will be made to the Parton model, because in Parton model you consider partons as sub-entities of a larger system that somehow emerges and then interacts. And this kind of picture will emerge in the considerations here. And if you want to consider processes which are localized in space and time and involve particles of specific momentum and energy, normally you would work with Wigner functions, and Wigner functions are formed from amplitudes, which you square the amplitude to get something which is analogous to probability, but simultaneously you carry out the Fourier transform, and then you get a quantity which is simultaneously a function of position and momentum. And if amplitude is smooth, then in fact this may be a positive quantity. Okay, I'll start out with a very simple process. Photon comes and is absorbed by some system B. System B will be is composite, so there's no problem with energy momentum conservation. It can absorb photon. You have a transition amplitude, and the transition amplitude can be represented as a convolution of the photon wave function with a transition element for the current of absorbing system. If you ask about how many transitions happen overall, you square transition amplitude, and you have integration, two integrations over space. And actually, you can rearrange those integrations in such a way that you actually carry out one integration over space and another integration over momentum. And what gets integrated is a quantity which can be interpreted as a rate of absorbing a photon at position x with four momentum q. And this rate is actually consists of a folding of a Wigner function for the photon, which is uniform in space, and is a delta at original photon for momentum, and with a Wigner function for the current of the absorbing system at position x and momentum. Okay. And this is this current in the Wigner form, and this this Wigner transformation may be interpreted as a density of final states for the photon in system B. Now, if you look now, let's say, at an exchange, now the photon will be virtual, emitted by some system, let's say A, absorbed by system B. You have in the transition amplitude, you have now two integrations over in space, matrix element of the current of B and of A, and the propagator of the photon from Y to X. Again, if you square this to get the number of transitions, you will have now several integrations in space, and you can manipulate them in such a way that you get a combination of integration over space and momentum. And these squares of the either current matrix elements or propagator can be rearranged into the Wigner form. And you can interpret this final expression as an integral over the history of the system, where photon gets emitted at position y and momentum q by system A. Then this is a phase space propagator of the photon with momentum q, and then the density for the absorption by system B. And this Wigner transform of the propagator now involves two propagators at offset arguments, Fourier transform in the offset. And this gives you the propagator for photon over distance x with momentum q. Now, one situation in physics where you actually look at a Fourier transform at a quantity in the processes which involve photon absorption is the Weizsacker-Williams approximation. And actually, these results here in the Wigner representation can be steered towards that approximation and actually compared with that approximation as it is done, say, in Jackson. And in the Wigner Weizsacker-Williams approximation, you actually consider energy content of Fourier components of a vector potential. So vector potential here produced by object A is a convolution of the photon propagator with the current of A. If you look at the Fourier transform, Wigner transform of this vector potential, this is this phase space propagator convoluted with the Wigner form of the Wigner transform of the current. And this sort of represents a typical source propagator form which you find in this phase space expressions, that you have a Wigner transform of a source, then convoluted with the Wigner transform of a propagator. If you look at this specific photon exchange, the difference compared to the standard Weizsacker-Williams approximation is that you carry this Fourier transformation in phase space, and in standard Weizsacker-Williams you carry it in energy only. In the end, you can interpret the transition number of transitions as integral over the history, over the space where those transitions occur, and photon momenta. The convolution here gives the distribution of virtual photons around object A, and then you fold it with the probability density for absorbing the photons by object B. In the standard Weizsäcker-Williams approximation, the current which you use is actually of a point charge, and then this gives transversality to the photons, to the velocity of the emitting object. In our case, when considering this simple process, we find that one can replace the current by the classical value, where the photon momentum is small compared to the momenta of the interacting objects. In this case, you can form a wave packet which is flat as relative to the momentum of the photon, and if momentum of the photon is low, then you can also ignore the change of momentum in the vertex. Now, if then the packet is localized, is flat on the inverse of the momentum, photon momentum, then you can replace the current by the classical value. Now, another issue which you face here compared to the standard Weizsäcker-Williams approximation, and which you face in general in those expressions, is the issue of the propagator in the exchange. The propagator, if you work in the perturbation theory, the propagator depends on the type of the perturbation expansion which you apply. Whether you apply Feynman perturbation theory or Schwinger. Schwinger is causal and employs retarded propagators, and actually the results which you get are simpler in such a case. And I'll, just for illustration, I'll show those for the Schwinger approach. And if you take the retarded propagator and carry out this integral, you can work out in the case of m equals zero, in the massless case, you can work out the propagator analytically, and this is the form. The propagator propagates forward in time within the light cone, and it depends otherwise on a variable which involves the product of the distance over which the photon travels and momentum. And this is product squared minus square of the vectors. If you include spin, this is for scalar. If you include spin, then the spin structure and covariant gauge cancel top. And the properties of this propagator are such that these specific variables propagates. There is no limit on propagation when x and p are parallel to each other. If they are not, then this sign over its argument clamps the propagation. And generally, you can consider the various cases. But so if you take q squared equal to zero, then the propagation is along the standard photon trajectory with deviations which are one over energy. If you consider either the time-like case, then the propagation in the frame of the photon is limited by the energy in time, and space, since it's inside the cone, is as well. If you consider a space-like photon, then the propagation is limited by inverse of the momentum. So in every case, you find that deviations from the classical classical expectations are governed by inverse of energy, momentum, or mass in some of those cases. Now, I take a static charge, point-like, and then for this case, in this case, you can work out this photon Wigner function completely, and look at various for the distributions of photons for various momenta, and so this charge is located at x and xL and xt equal to zero. The photon momentum is now spatial and directed to the right. And in such a case, you see a Lorentz contraction of the distribution, and the Lorentz contraction occurs in the direction of the momentum of the photon, because since the charge, emitting charge is at rest. Now, if we take a moving charge, this is a charge moving to the right with 0.9c. This is a Wigner distribution for a photon with momentum which is collinear with the moving charge, and you get the Lorentz contraction. Now the right panel shows a distribution for a photon with momentum at 45 degrees, and although the charge moves, the mother charge or the original charge moves to the right, the contraction is in the direction of the photon at 45 degrees. Now, let's consider some other further processes, adding a little bit of complication. So, let's say a photon comes in the vicinity of object B and splits into a pair, and electron gets absorbed and positron emitted. Now, again, you can write the process amplitude. Now it involves the propagator for the electron. Again, you can rewrite this, the number of transitions, as an folding of Wigner functions. And now you have a Wigner function of the photon, convoluted with again, if when you have a propagator for the electron, each time when you have a spin structure, you can factor out the scalar part and this spin matrix, and you also have a Wigner function for the density for absorbing of the electron now, and altogether, you acquire here a structure where in the vicinity of the photon, you have a distribution of virtual electrons, and then this gets folded with the probability density for absorbing those electrons by object B. Note that photon itself may be virtual to start with and be emitted by some other source. So as an example, I'll take again charge, a point-like charge, emitting a photon, and then this photon emits, breaks into a pair, and we register the positron goes on shell, and we look at the distribution of the virtual electron, and this is now the original charge is moving at 0.9c to the right. The electron is moving also to the right, and now again the distribution is contracted in the direction perpendicular to the investigated electron, but now in contrast to the previous case where we looked at the distribution of virtual photons, now we have forward-backward asymmetry, and if you look carefully at this distribution is shifted forward relative to zero, and this is associated with the recoil of the positron. Okay, if you go to further processes, for example, say two photons come in and from some sources and produce an electron-positron pair. And again, you look whether you can represent this process in terms of phase-phase folding. The square of the transition matrix involves square of this diagram, that diagram, and these here can be written in the phase space form. But then you also have an interference interference term between those diagrams, which for those who work in Rick physics has an actually an appearance of an HBT, Hanbury-Brown twist-like correlation. And actually this kind of term spoils this straightforward factorization. And it spoils this factorization as long as the momenta of those of electron and positron in the frame of the pair are comparable. The factorization gets killed if you demand high momenta, for example, one maybe accompanying in the vicinity of one interacting object and the other in the vicinity of another interacting object. Now, this kind of scale separation actually is valid in the typical situations where Parton model is QCD Parton model is considered, and one of such scale separations is the case of DGLAB. Maybe before I get to this, maybe just a mention about I mentioned here the electron propagator. What happens if you have massive propagator is that the massive propagator can be expressed as in phase space as a scalar propagator, massless propagator, and the correction. And this correction removes pieces in an obvious fashion, removes pieces of the propagator close to the line cone. So limiting the propagation for low momenta to the interior of the cone. And as before, you find that with this propagator that deviations from the onset trajectory is are of the order one of our energy. Going to the case of DGLAB. In DGLAB, you consider a Parton cascade formed by, for example, a hadron. And in this cascade, the virtuality of the subsequent partons is increasing. Also, the portion of B momentum is ordered. And in this kind of tree form of emission amplitude, each parton is, represents a source for the next one. And in the phase space approach, the propagation determines the size of virtual cloud. The first, in the case of a hadron, the first source is limited by the bag. And the bag will be have standard size in the transverse direction of the hadron and will be Lorentz contracted in the along the momentum of the original hadron. Now, the propagation in general will be increasing the size of the cloud by 1 over the momentum of the emitted parton. And if you look at the transverse direction, if since these partons have high virtuality, addition of 1 over the virtuality in the transverse direction is doesn't change the size of the cloud. However, when you have high contraction, then this increase of the size in the longitudinal direction will be serious. And the softer the parton, the bigger will be the cloud in the longitudinal direction, with partons, let's say, delocalized both beyond the hadron, and then if you have a collection of hadrons in the nucleus, beyond the nucleus. The same occurs in BFKL, although there the analysis a bit more involved because there are no constraints on the transverse momenta, and you have to differentiate between the cases. But in any case, the greatest extension which you get in the beam direction is 1 over the energy or absolute value of the energy of the parton. So the softer the parton, the farther it will be coming out of the original source. And of course, if you have many hadrons inside the nucleus, then these soft partons will be going out and actually seeing color charges of many nucleons on its path. And so this gives some support for McLaurin-Venugopalan considerations. And however, in the transverse direction, the extension of the cloud is ignorable. So to sum up, when in the absence of interference, you can express probabilities from tree-type processes in phase space form, in the transparent convolutions of propagators of sources, where one convolution becomes, say, source convoluted with propagator becomes a source for the next process. The massless phase-phase propagators can be given in analytic form, the massive involved one-dimensional integral. When interferences take place, they have an Hunbury-Brown twist form and cause problems for this picture. The phase-phase propagation is causal for if you employ retarded perturbation theory, and deviations from classical motions are limited by energy, momentum, or mass. If there's a scale separation, then interference terms get suppressed. And if you employ these considerations to QCD environment, then you find that weak partons extend farthest from a nucleus, and in an interaction should be first to interact between the objects. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Questions or comments?